In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, August 22nd, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Focusing today in the 3 o'clock hour on some information technology issues that the federal government is dealing with. And my guest is the CEO of Government CIO, Brian Moran. It is great to have you in the studio, Brian. Nice to meet you. And we were talking just before we went on the air, a fellow Towson Tiger.
Yes, and great to meet you too as well, Francis.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in. You've been involved in the federal space in IT for a fairly long period of time. And as we look at the changes that are happening, changes in the role of the CIO, changes in the technology, of course, and then just within the last couple of weeks, an actual change at the top with Vivek Kundra leaving and Steve Van Roekel coming in. As you think about all of these changes that are going on, what do you think are the changes that are most impacting the way the agencies work day to day, not even necessarily just in the IT shop, but because of how interwoven technology has become in meeting missions in the overall performances of the agencies?
Well, I think Vic Kundra was very prescient when he laid out the cloud-first strategy, and I think that is going to have the largest impact on federal IT computing for the next couple of years. It's going to change the way we procure services. It's going to change the way we operate within an agency. And it's going to impact the way folks work and are trained within a government environment as well.
The changes, those changes are all, I think, the things that other folks have talked about. What I am wondering is what the cultural changes are going to have to be, because if there's one thing that people say about government, it's not really quick to change. And some of the technologies that we're talking about here are in and of themselves changing so rapidly. Cloud computing doesn't look the same today that it did 3 years ago when people first really started thinking about it as a possibility for federal technology. So, and yet the systems in which we get those things, the procurement systems, are really difficult to kind of turn around. What do you think? How are the agencies doing at those kinds of changes?
Well, the first thing that you had mentioned was the concept of organizational change. That's cloud computing itself is going to morph and change, and the technologies underneath the hood are going to constantly change. But what cloud computing is, it's really a new business model, and it's a new way for delivering services, and it's not so much the underlying technology. So the business model of cloud computing is actually going to have a fundamental impact on the business relationships that government agencies have with IT service providers. And that fundamental change is actually going to require massive government-wide organizational change. And that means that folks are going to have to, from the very top most senior folks, really understand what that means to switch from capital expenditures and buying hardware and equipment and buying software licenses to managing service relationships, managing more utility-based contracts as opposed to deep capital assets. So in order to be able to affect that massive organizational change, we need to have things tied to performance for the agency. So PDs need to be rewritten and need to actually factor in cloud-related strategies. Folks need to be trained better and need to have a better understanding of how cloud can be procured and how cloud can be managed. Security certifications are actually starting to form now around cloud computing. So that means that there's skills and special abilities that need to be honed and developed to be able to manage this new relationship.
Are the people who are involved in doing those things at the agencies getting the kind of support that they need to be able to learn those new skills? Because this first thing that usually goes in tight budgets is training and travel.
Absolutely.
Are we there?
So far, I think training has been a highlight, and people are recognizing that we're moving in a new direction. You know, in talking to Bijendra Paul a couple of weeks ago, I think he's actually out there hitting the pavement, talking to folks and making sure that they understand what cloud computing is. His folks, David McClure and the rest of the folks that are part of FedRAMP and GSA in general are out there providing education. You know, the USDA grad school, that's one of our partners, so I have to put a disclaimer there. We've partnered with them to do training in the cloud computing space. And this is something that everybody recognizes, but budgets are lean, and you're right, training is going to suffer. But if you're going to make an organizational change, like adopting cloud computing, people are going to have to be trained in order to be able to adopt it. So if you want to see the long-term cost savings that cloud computing offers, you have to make sure that there's a disciplined approach to getting towards cloud computing. That means folks are trained on acquiring systems. That means folks understand how to manage the contracts and those service contracts that they have with the new providers. Mm-hmm. That means they know how to evaluate security controls in a cloud environment. Even though FedRAMP is supposed to help us alleviate some of the agency burden, each agency still has to perform an ATO. And that ATO now will be in a hybrid environment of cloud and local controls. Mm-hmm. And those local controls are still going to be impacted by the fact that it's a cloud-based environment. So there's a lot of change that needs to be addressed.
Is there maybe too much change going on all at once, or is this manageable, do you think, for most agencies?
You know, it's not just manageable. It will become manageable, and it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
This cost driver, these budgets that we can't get away from, we know that the budgets are going to shrink. So it's a change that has to happen because it's a way to save money. And in order to save money, agencies are going to have to move to more utility-based computing.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's too much too fast, everybody's going to have to figure out how to get on board with that because budgets are going to drive that.
Yeah. You mentioned a few minutes ago recognizing the people who are doing well and how accountability is going to drive a lot of this. Do you think the IT dashboard does a good job of that?
Well, I think the IT dashboard is a good step towards developing visibility into IT programs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the complexities of the IT dashboard is it's linked to the current budgeting process. And the current budgeting process is linked to a very capital-intensive budgeting process. And as we move to cloud computing, we move to a more utility-based, which is much more like paying cell phone bills than
right.
It is like buying hardware and software. So with that complexity, the IT dashboard and the budgeting process itself is going to have to go through a series of revisions in order to be able to better address cloud computing.
Mm-hmm. That idea of cell phone type billing instead of I own this server right here or this stack or whatever, there's still a little bit of resistance out there to that, isn't there? There's still some folks that like to be able to walk into their data centers and see exactly what they've got.
Absolutely. And it's understood, right? When you're dealing with something, you like to manage things that you have control over, and you always feel like you have control over something which you have possession.
Mm-hmm.
So moving something to somebody else's data center means that you're relinquishing possession, physical ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to reconcile with, can I still be as safe and can I still operate the way I used to? Now, back to your other point before about organizational change. So we're used to a series of security controls that are designed to manage on-premise IT. Now we've moved to off-premise IT, and we have to rethink the way we're going to do this off-premise IT.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is a fundamental change. And that requires a carrot and, you know, not just carrots, but education. So
yeah.
People need to be incentivized. You know, what do I get if I move everything to the cloud? What's the benefit in moving it to the cloud?
Yeah.
Is it just savings or is there something else?
I think a lot of vendors thought, if we just bring the people here to our facility and show them that we're doing all the same security things they're doing, that'll be enough. And it wasn't enough.
No, it isn't. Because people believe, you know, there's a perception that I'm doing security better than anyone else is doing.
Mm-hmm. Or I would do it better, right?
Or I would do it better than somebody else would do. And, you know, and that's always going to be a bias because you're always going to feel like if you have physical control over something, you could do a better job than mm-hmm. if you relinquish control.
Yeah.
And it's a perceived set of risks. Are they going to accept what somebody else underwrites?
Yeah.
And you have to be comfortable with that. But now people are going to be compelled. So whether you're comfortable or not, the budgets are going to compel you to reduce costs. And this is a logical way to reduce costs.
Brian Moran is the chief executive officer of Government CIO and my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I had knowledgeable government IT person tell me today that there still is some struggle when it comes to getting security baked into these solutions from the beginning, that it's still a bolt-on thing. Let's talk about that a little bit if we can when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Our policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Energy Department has just redesigned and relaunched its main website using free open source software. The new edition of energy.gov was designed using the Drupal content management system. The department says not only does it support hosting on a cloud-based back-end infrastructure, it'll also let Energy do a better job of engaging with visitors to the site. It includes new features that give users localized information and resources about saving energy and other topics.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Are you packing a few extra pounds, maybe more than a few? If so, you're not alone. One in three Americans are considered obese, and that can lead to serious health problems such as diabetes and heart disease. Combining diet and exercise is the best way to lose weight. But if that's not working, surgery may be an option.
Bariatric surgery is an operation designed to help people to lose weight.
And when it comes to surgery, Mayo Clinic Dr. Michael Saar says there are really two approaches. One is to restrict the amount of calories that can be ingested. The other is to manipulate the anatomy so the body doesn't absorb as many calories. Both are effective, but you also need to remember,
the operation is only one small part of this.
You're also committing yourself to lifelong lifestyle changes. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Tuesday morning's Federal Drive. The National Archives is working with other agencies to get their documents posted quickly and efficiently. And no matter what your musical taste, the Library of Congress concert schedule can accommodate you. That and more Tuesday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Brian Moran, the CEO of Government CIO, and we're talking about cloud computing and security and IT issues in the federal government. As I mentioned, a friend of mine who is in federal IT was telling me over the weekend that we're still kind of in the bolt-on afterthought
not afterthought, aftermarket mode of security when it comes to a lot of these things. And I mentioned the experience that some vendors had where they said, well, we'll just put in all the security things that agencies are doing and that should be good enough. Why has the security part of it and integrating the security element into all of these technologies been difficult for agencies to figure out or decide how to move forward on, do you think?
Well, security's been difficult since FISMA. So it's been difficult to implement all of the controls that are found that NIST identifies. So agencies have struggled with that. And it's kind of like taking it back to the construction industry and trying to draw analogies between construction and software. You know, we expect software to run as a disciplined practice like construction, even though we've been doing construction engineering for 2,000 years since Roman times. Software engineering has only been in existence for a brief period of time. So when we come with technology and trying to secure technology, adopting cloud is another complexity, another variable, and that makes selecting controls and implementing controls even that much more complex. Mm-hmm. So that's why agencies and vendors both are struggling with providing compliant solutions. And I don't want to say secure solutions because that's not always the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's another interesting thing that I want to come back to. But one of the things that people have said about some of the things, legislation that's being considered on the Hill to replace FISMA is that they want to see a transition from this checklist approach that FISMA had to a continuous monitoring thing. Is that the panacea for this, though? I wonder if we'll get to a point where we have FISMA 2 and it doesn't turn out to be that much more easy for CIOs to work with than the first one.
Well, continuous monitoring is the approach that's necessary because that's where you're going to identify weaknesses as they are discovered and discoverable. So you can't always identify something. New tools come out and come into existence. New threats come into existence. So continuous monitoring is really the approach that is much more effective than waiting every 3 years to do a comprehensive census of controls mm-hmm. and just doing a spot set of controls and doing self-audits on an annual basis.
If that's the case, though, then why do we need a piece of legislation to tell agencies they should do it? They should just do it, shouldn't they?
Well, no, because right now the cycle that that's been imposed upon them is a 3-year cycle. So they have to do an authorization to operate mm-hmm. every 3 years. They're supposed to embed continuous monitoring within it. Now, I don't know that there's necessarily an absolute need for new legislation or maybe some revision to NIST's approach. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be a hybrid of the two that might work effectively.
If there was going to be a new piece of legislation, and we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, and Congress seems to keep getting distracted by these little things like budgets and debt limits and stuff like that. What do you think that piece of legislation should look like if there has to be one?
Oh, so you've actually made me now a congressman.
Sure.
In fact,
I'll put you in the Senate.
Okay.
That's even better.
Excellent. So if I was in the Senate and I was drafting the legislation for FISMA, I would actually focus on continuous monitoring and I would focus on trying to improve the government's agility to respond to new threats. Mm-hmm. And continuous monitoring is the key to that agility. If you're running through a process where things are being discovered as they unfold and reacting to that and dealing with it, you're more likely to deal with those threats and to have an actual impact on security. Mm-hmm. We see that in software development, right? The waterfall approach has proven itself to be less impactful than moving towards a more agile approach. Mm-hmm. And the agility that we're enjoying in software development, we need to adopt that in security. And we need to show that a much more tightly focused iterative approach to security will progressively improve our posture. And we have to understand that, you know, we're never going to be 100%. You know, FISMA makes you represent yourself as being 100% or pushing towards 100%. Continuous monitoring says, I understand my threat level, and I'm going to continuously try to improve that posture against that threat level.
Mm-hmm. If you, as Senator Moran, give the agencies that agility, are they, if you give them the authority to be that agile, are they actually going to be agile enough, do you think? Do they have the tools to be able to perform up to that standard?
There are technologies that are there that are available. The the tools that are not in place are the current CNA processes. You know, they're very laborious, they're very expensive, and if those processes are retooled, and if FSMA changed today, agencies would have a difficult time just adopting the FSMA 2 because they have an existing infrastructure, an existing set of contracts, an existing approach that that they've been wedded to.
Mm-hmm.
So that approach needs to break. And I think that's why people are driving towards a legislative change, because they want to be able to point back to something and say, that's why I had to create new contracts. That's why I had to change my internal policies and my internal procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just it being a recommendation, it's a real legitimate mandate.
Yeah, some teeth behind it.
Yes.
The solutions there, or the challenges that you're talking about, sound remarkably similar to some of the challenges that we talked about in the first segment when it comes to cloud computing as a whole. If the acquisition system isn't well suited, and some other things like that. Some infrastructure stuff within the agencies.
Absolutely. You know, and I actually think there's some similarities, but there's some differences. So in security, the acquisition process that we run through, there could be some agility added if there was more sole sources and more limited competition for rapid requisition of services to deal with threats,
mm-hmm.
right? So if we aligned our acquisition process to deal with what we're trying to accomplish, which is we're trying to accomplish threat mitigation. So let's align our acquisition process to that. On the other side, we're trying to adopt utility computing. Let's align our acquisition process to a utility-based. So the acquisitions might actually be different, you know, the types of vehicles that you adopt and the cycles associated with it. But
mm-hmm.
I think at the top level, you're right, because it is acquisitional changes, and it's also organizational changes that
yeah.
need to be affected.
It seems like the big buckets that you would want to look at to make sure that they're conform to what the changes are that you need to make are the same, even if what you do inside those buckets are different.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's kind of where I was headed with that. All right. Brian Moran's my guest. He's the CEO of Government CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
They gave a part of themselves, sacrificed for our freedom. The brave men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces, wounded in action overseas. Now it's our turn to give as they return home. So join the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing much-needed direct programs for injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
What's new with the family? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Family news can be important to doctors, too. Researchers say that if a patient's close relative develops a disease that can run in families, the patient's risk may go up, so doctors could change their recommendations for screening tests. At Baylor College of Medicine, Sharon Plond saw this in data on close relatives of about 11,000 patients across the country. The analysis looked at colorectal, breast, and prostate cancers. Dr. Plond.
Our hope is that physicians and patients will be more sophisticated about who needs the more intensive or earlier screening so that we can pick up cancers at an earlier age.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Brian Moran, the CEO of Government CIO. And you mentioned in the last segment, you talked about agility in development of all kinds of IT projects in government. That's a buzzword right now. A lot of vendors are doing whatever they can to demonstrate to agencies we can do it this way and so on. And we're transitioning out of this waterfall approach that's been common in government IT for a long time. I wonder if you think that that's really an evolution, whether it is a process that is changing and whether that change will be permanent, or whether you see it as more a pendulum swing where one side is waterfall and we're swinging all the way over here to Agile 18 month, and at some point in time we could swing back either toward the middle or all the way back over. And as I think about it, it seems to me perfectly within the realm of reason that if there are a lot of problems in IT development in the next 5 years or so, some CIO at some point, some federal CIO could say, well, this agile approach hasn't really worked. And so we're going to go to a model that, as he lays or she lays out the tenets of it, it sounds remarkably like waterfall project. Is that possible, do you think?
It is possible if agility is co-opted by the folks who want to do ad hoc IT. And that would be my fear, is that instead of people allowing it to be a natural evolutionary progressionary step, so we're moving from highly structured waterfall single steps, moving forward, trying to throw a knife switch to deliver systems, to understanding that requirements require a process of discovery that lasts throughout the entire system development lifecycle. As long as people keep a disciplined, structured, planned approach towards delivering systems, the pendulum won't swing. The pendulum will swing if people move towards ad hoc IT rather than moving towards controlled agile IT.
Mm-hmm. Detail the differences so that I'm clear on which each of those compartments looks like.
Sure. You know, in ad hoc IT, that means there's no plans for what you're going to do tomorrow, and that today you're writing code, you're making changes, and all that's happening on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no decision and no plan and no trade-off and no sets of budgets and no way to actually gauge success. In Agile, you still have milestones. You still have a structured set of targets. The only thing that you say is that there's a level of uncertainty, and I'm going to plan for that uncertainty, and this is how I'm going to account for that uncertainty, and I'm going to run through evolutions and in a more iterative process in order to get through to deliver the final value that I want to deliver, mm-hmm. as opposed to trying to throw a knife switch and missing a large percentage of those requirements.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about when you define ad hoc development, that sounds tremendously disorganized, tremendously inefficient, and I could probably come up with other adjectives that are not complimentary of it. Is that kind of thing going on, or is there a potential for that kind of thing to actually go on in agencies?
Oh, it still goes on. It goes on, and it's actually where IT started. So it's sort of the base of IT, and the reason why Waterfall came about was to add some discipline and some rigor and some structure, mm-hmm. and to try to take what we learned from engineering and construction engineering and apply that to software engineering. And that was understood because there were a lot of projects where tons of money was being spent on them, mm-hmm. and thrown at it, and nothing of value was being delivered. Mm-hmm. The smaller the project, the more likely it's closer to ad hoc IT than it is to structured and disciplined agile software development. It doesn't mean it has to be that way, but that tends to be the fallout.
How do you or anyone prevent agile from slipping into ad hoc? What keeps those structures in place and working?
Well, folks who understand Agile, you have to have trained program managers, trained project managers. You have to have an educated management staff who understand the difference between ad hoc and Agile and Waterfall. People have to see results, so projects have to be successful. The other thing, Agile gives you a chance to peek into a project relatively early, and mm-hmm. And instead of waiting towards the end of a project to realize that project's failing. So the other thing that Agile needs to be used as a means for quickly killing projects and not killing PMs,
mm-hmm.
so that projects disintegrate much earlier because they're proving, you know, fold early, fold often.
Yeah.
Recognize that the project isn't going to deliver value, even though we thought it would, and just because it's Agile doesn't mean it's going to be a sure thing and that's the right concept either. It'll actually allow you to discover if it's a failed concept much earlier.
Mm-hmm. Federal agencies, though, aren't really comfortable, one, with failing, and two, with admitting failure. Those are two things that they don't like to do very much.
Well, you know, if you look at what the VA is doing with the PMAS PAS process that that Baker's implemented, he's going out there, he's suspending projects, and he is doing evaluations on projects. And, you know, that, I think, is going to start catching on. You know, that's what the TxDOT process is supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm. What is the role of commercial off-the-shelf play in this, too? Because it strikes me that if agencies become more willing to go to the shelf and say, this is close and we just have to alter this laundry list of things rather than start from scratch, that prevents the waterfall process from happening in the first place.
It can. And if folks are willing to change their business process as opposed to try to re-engineer a system, then you have a more likelihood of rapid adoption of technology. Because just because we used to do something in the past doesn't mean we have to continue to do it the same way. I've seen systems and situations where one of the outputs of a system is to send an email to a particular mailbox, and it seems like critical information, but it turns out that nobody's monitoring that email box, and you know there's actually millions of dollars spent on engineering a solution that would still send out that email,
mm-hmm.
and that email actually isn't being used. But it's a requirement that.
But the phrase willing to change their processes seems to be completely 180 degrees opposite to the concept of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it's really hard to move people off of that mindset, isn't it?
Oh, sure. But, you know, typically it is broke, right? We have processes that terminate and provide no value.
Mm-hmm.
And we have existing systems that are expensive to continue to maintain, and we might have lower cost alternatives that require a hybrid approach. It requires a new system, and it requires a modified business process. As long as the outcomes, we need to always focus on outcomes and not on these intermediate steps. And we, in the government, we focus a lot on intermediate steps.
I want to follow up on that when we come back, because the focus on outcomes ties in with something that I've noticed more and more in government IT in the last, especially in the last like 6 months, but maybe in the last 2 years as a whole. We'll talk about that when we come back. Brian Moran is my guest. He's the CEO of Government CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
you're in federal IT, CDWG has the people and products to seamlessly integrate all your communications into a single, unified, accessible communications network. So if your employees are scattered hither and yon, visit cdwg.com/unified. We'll make it seem like they're all hither, not yon. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how scalable Cisco switches can help improve collaboration by seamlessly connecting your communications.
What skills do strategic leaders need to be successful in the information age? How is the National Defense University's iCollege positioning itself as a global hub for educating, informing, and connecting information age leaders? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the iCollege at the National Defense University, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Maryland Democratic Congressman Chris Van Hollen, a member of the super committee looking for ways to cut federal spending.
If we're not able to reach an agreement, that would, of course, not send a very good signal to the markets and the economy. And this sort of Damocles, which will come down if we're unable to reach an agreement that will sort of indiscriminately cut important investments in both defense and non-defense.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
What's new with the family? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Family news can be important to doctors, too. Researchers say that if a patient's close relative develops a disease that can run in families, the patient's risk may go up, so doctors could change their recommendations for screening tests. At Baylor College of Medicine, Sharon Plond saw this in data on close relatives of about 11,000 patients across the country. The analysis looked at colorectal, breast, and prostate cancers. Dr. Plon.
Our hope is that physicians and patients will be more sophisticated about who needs the more intensive or earlier screening so that we can pick up cancers at an earlier age.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Brian Moran is the CEO of Government CIO. And you mentioned before that the focus on outcomes is something that you've seen that's a little bit different. And I have noticed that, too. We were talking during the break that in the past couple of years, but I would say in the last 6 months in particular, I've noticed kind of a change in the way that CIOs and other IT officials at the agencies talk about what they're doing and talk about the work that they're doing, the programs that they're managing, and so on. And it kind of fits with something that I've seen all across government, which is I've heard the word customer or client more in the past probably year than I heard it in the 10 years before that that I covered government agencies and Congress. And this idea of, and I gave you the example of Roger Baker and Terry Takei. I moderated a panel with Terry Takei back in April or May, and she used the term serving the warfighter or some derivative thereof a whole bunch of times. Roger thinks of his job as serving the veterans that have been in the military, not running the IT shop, the Department of Veterans Affairs. What does that mean for how these agencies run their IT departments, and what does that mean for the other people who aren't IT people who have a different sense maybe of how their IT shops are running at their agencies?
Well, I think in the long run it means that IT is going to deliver more than they had in the past. What we're starting to see with the shift in focus from being intermediate steps, worrying about how things are done, to worrying about what gets done and who we're serving, people are going to recognize that no longer do we need to focus on some of these functions that we have in the past, and no longer do those things need to be insourced, but actually some of those functions will end up getting outsourced. Mm-hmm. And that's actually – that meshes with the concept of cloud computing. Cloud computing – people are starting to recognize that hosting systems, on-premise IT for certain things, isn't really a core competency of that agency and not something that the CIO sees as something he has to stay in business in, or she. What they recognize is that they need to be able to deliver value to the organization, whatever that means. They need to be able to provide that end service, however they deliver that end service, whether it's through a cloud vendor or internally, whichever one's the lowest cost option, whichever one is going to maintain the security posture they need to maintain.
Mm-hmm. CIOs have complained, not just in the federal government and private sector too, have complained since the beginning that I'm the guy or woman that they call when fill in the blank, whatever the technology is, when their floppy disks won't load or when their CD drive won't come out of the box or when their BlackBerry breaks or whatever the current technology is. And this focus on the mission or the customer or whatever you want to call it seems to be happening at the same time CIOs are saying, hey, wait a minute, IT is so interwoven into what we do that we really should be involved. We should be in the meetings with the secretary, and we should be in the meetings with the other C-level executives and not just told afterwards, okay, this is what we're going to do, and how can you make the technology work for us? So that's a good – it seems like a good time for that transition to be happening, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I think you hit the nail on the head in one part, because their realignment in their speech and their approach is actually what's probably getting them more of a seat at the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're showing that they're serving the warfighter, that they're serving the veterans, that they're serving the organization and the end users, as opposed to, I'm here to keep your pipes running.
Right.
I'm here more in a plumber-type capacity than I am in a IT service capacity,
mm-hmm.
and trying to deliver innovation.
And that goes to what you were saying before about adding value to the organization, because the value to the organization isn't our network is up and running 99.999% of the time. The value added to the organization is whoever it is, whatever citizen it is that we're serving, can get the services that he or she's entitled to because of the network being up all the time or whatever the service is.
Absolutely. IT is a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
The end is whatever that service is. And IT, when they subordinate themselves in that role, become much more effective in delivering and supporting that role.
We're starting to see that on some level with social media, where for a long time the agencies said, I actually had a conversation like this with one CIO. We're going to go on Facebook. And I said, that's great. What are you going to do? This is about 2 years ago. What are you going to do on Facebook? We're going to have a page on Facebook so we can communicate with. What are you going to tell them? Well, and that part wasn't quite as fleshed out, where we're going to talk here in about 15 minutes to an official at Health and Human Services, where they're building a Facebook app that has a specific definition and it serves a legitimate need. It's going to help citizens connect with the people that they talk to on social media to establish a plan during emergencies, during some kind of a health emergency, swine flu or mm-hmm. bird flu or whatever it would happen to be. Here's how you deal with that and how you communicate with people. That's using the technology as a platform, as you're talking about, and not just as a toy or a destination. And that seems to be something that agencies have had a hard time figuring out how to do.
Well, they're making, I think, tremendous progress.
Mm-hmm.
And the change in attitude at the top has made its way further down the organization. So folks understand that they need to be able to add value or their budgets are going to get reduced. They need to be able to deliver or their staffing levels are going to be reduced. And even if they do suffer from reductions in staffing level, there's greater levels of expectation for outcome being placed on them. Mm-hmm. And I think, applying performance metrics, it doesn't matter what administration you're in, that's going to continue, and that's going to continue to go down each level within the organization, tying performance metrics to PDs and showing that those PDs align with the end goals of the agency as opposed to just IT.
There's three little letters that I wrote down on my sheet here that I think a lot of CIOs probably didn't think they'd have to deal with when they got into the business, but they are right now, and that's ROI. And I want to talk about that with you a little bit when we come back to wrap up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Brian Moran of Government CIO is my guest, and we'll finish up in just a few minutes on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Some people can't imagine how someone who is blind or has other significant disabilities contributes to our economy. But more than 47,000 Ability One employees fulfill federal contracts, providing quality goods and services. Some people think that jobs for those who are blind or have other significant disabilities cost taxpayers. Ability One creates job opportunities without additional cost to federal taxpayers. Some think these individuals can't achieve independence. We know better. What do you think? Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my partner and specialist in family law, Dave Zangrilli, where we're going to be talking about the provocative topic of adultery. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. For more on the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Brian Moran of Government CIO has been my guest for the hour. I appreciate your time. It's been a terrific conversation. Really enjoyed having you come on to talk about a lot of these things. I mentioned before the break that three letters that CIOs probably never thought they'd have to use or demonstrate in their jobs, but they are because of the budget situation that we're in, is ROI. That's not going to stop anytime soon, is it? That's here to stay.
Return on investment's here to stay, and I think the scrutiny applied to it is just going to be increased as opposed to forgotten.
You are involved with the Graduate School USA, which is how you got here in the first place. Talk about what you're doing with them and what they're trying to do in some of these areas to help educate people that are trying to make these things happen in government.
Sure. So we partnered with the Graduate School USA to develop their cloud computing curriculum. So one of the things that we recognized was that there really is not a unified understanding for cloud computing. So we wanted to be able to educate folks on cloud computing, security, and how to architect systems within the cloud. Mm-hmm. So we came up with a series of courses, and we work with the Graduate School USA to develop those courses and implement them.
Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty unique view of what it is that people know and don't know when they come into the classroom and sit down and get ready to learn about this stuff. You can tell by the questions that they're asking and so on.
Absolutely.
How far along people
are. And that was actually, that was driven by our consulting practice, and that's sort of the nexus of where it came from. We were helping agencies develop cloud strategies. We had worked with the graduate school in other capacities, and then it kind of spawned, I think, a good set of relationships. We said, we have this expertise in cloud computing. there's a need for this type of education, let's develop a curriculum to solve that.
We're going to link up to the Graduate School USA website at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth when we post this interview so people can find out what the graduate school does in not just in cloud computing, but a lot of other areas. Overall, are we headed on an upward curve or kind of treading water or downward curve when it comes to some of the things that we've talked about on the show today, do you think?
Well, I think the ROI is on an upward curve. So we're going to see greater returns on investment when we adopt utility computing because mm-hmm. the costs are going to be reduced. The agility for procurement is going to be increased. You know, in the past, we would buy a box and we would have to put in a purchase order for that box. Then that purchase order would have to get processed from someone in acquisitions. And then somebody in acquisitions would buy the box. Somebody in IT would get the box. The box would have an image applied to it. It would be deployed on a network and a security engineer would test that. Now with cloud computing, if you have a service provider that allows this, you can provision the same server within minutes under your existing contract and with relatively low impacts on cost and be able to deliver something that had the appropriate image that was tested and that is going to mirror what was done in the past.
Mm-hmm. Those changes are revolutionary, and I would love to have you come back at some point as these things progress and help me keep an eye on how the agencies are really doing, and more importantly, based on what you're doing at Graduate School USA, how people in the agencies are understanding what it is they're supposed to be doing. Thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Happy to do it. Brian Moran is the CEO of Government CIO, my guest for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose, Facebook is a platform, not a destination. Health and Human Services will use it for a lifeline, and they'll tell you how when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.